go behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Scott Benjamin, the auto editor here at HowStuffWorks.com.
And I am Ben Bolin. I write some videos here. I was hanging on for a second, Scott. I wanted to try to do something different. I think what we got there works.
Yeah, it's pretty standard. I'm going to switch it up next time.
Yeah, I might. This is maybe our fifth take of this episode, and we've been trying to do something different the whole time. You know, fireworks. Had some people yelling in the background.
Fireworks are no good over the, you know, the airwaves.
I didn't think, you know, first we're an audio podcast.
Bang. See, there you go.
There it goes.
Interrupts. Yeah. It just interrupts.
It's like, have you heard the joke about the interrupting cow?
Go ahead.
I'm going to do it.
Oh, no. Please. Okay. Yeah. I've got an 8-year-old. The kid loves it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Favorite.
For those who don't know, it's a knock knock joke that.
Well, go ahead.
Is still really okay. Knock knock.
Who's there?
The interrupting cow.
The interrupting
moo!
Cow.
Moo!
Boy, that's annoying.
I know. I'm sorry.
No, it's funny, though.
There's somebody.
I'm sure somebody out there has not heard that one and says, ha, I've got the greatest joke. Listen to this.
Yeah, maybe. Okay. Maybe we're brightening days.
Maybe.
Hey, so before we get into this, we need an update on the project car.
Oh, really? You do want to do that? This is unexpected.
This is unexpected.
Yeah, we had a conversation this morning, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. There is an update. There's a possibility out there. There's a potential car right now that I'm looking at. It's a giant car. Mm-hmm. It's not 100% yet. I'll let you know when it is or if it is. It's a, it's a 1967 Chrysler Newport Custom. And it's enormous. It's a huge, I mean, a 20 footer, like a giant car.
Yeah. Makes my Monte Carlo look like a Miata or something.
I was semi-unsure until this morning when I went to look at it, and they opened the hood, and there was an enormous V8 engine, a huge 440 engine underneath the hood, and looked really good, really strong, started right up. The interior's perfect. Exterior, not so good, but that's the kind of purpose of this thing. No fuel tank. Using like a big marine fuel cell type thing in the trunk right now. So that's, you know, an instant necessity.
Mm-hmm.
But again, that's what puts it in the price range.
So the reason, now, Scott, I apologize because I know I kind of blindsided you there, buddy.
Yeah.
I hope we're cool.
That's all right.
The reason that I brought this up was sort of a segue because right now you're one of the few people I know who is looking for a vehicle.
Hmm.
But in a way, this show today is about people who are looking for vehicles.
Oh, sure.
And how to get them.
Yep.
In
yep.
the door, right?
Yeah, how to get the customers in the door,
mm-hmm.
really.
Mm-hmm.
And so you've probably read the title by now. It's Halo Cars. And that may be a new term to some of you.
And it may be a confusing term to others. We are not referring to the video game Halo, nor the vehicles in it.
Correct, yeah.
I had to tell our editor, Matt, that we were.
You know, I didn't even know that connection existed. See, I'm out of the loop on the
video.
Oh,
you're fine.
I'm just not a video gamer.
Gamer? Well, not
right?
yet.
Yeah, gamer.
It's
That's
the wave
right.
of the future.
Yeah. You have another term for that, gamer?
I think gamer works, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
There are probably people that have terms for themselves.
Yeah, I figured there's something new by this point. I was way behind.
Yeah, I'm pretty
Anyways,
out there.
The idea behind a Halo car.
Yes.
Not the video game. Is a vehicle that kind of showcases everything that a car company can do,
mm-hmm.
and they do it in limited production usually, and you know, it just has all the bells and whistles, and that's what gets the people in the door, and then they kind of shift their focus over to another vehicle that maybe is a little bit more within reason for purchase.
Shock and awe, basically, is what we're talking about. Yeah. Shock and awe with luxury.
Exactly, and this is the one. You know, these are the cars that you go in. You'll see. Nose prints against the wind, you know, the glass mm-hmm, in the mm-hmm, morning when the mm-hmm. dealership opens. That's because they have a Halo car on the showroom floor.
Mm-hmm.
Good examples of these, Dodge Viper, the Ford GT.
Excellent, good examples.
What else they have? Let's see, the Cadillac XLR.
Nice one, yeah.
You know, the two-door, or I'm sorry, yeah, two-seater Cadillac convertible.
Mm-hmm.
Now there's just a whole bunch of them. We could talk about a bunch of them here, but, what they do, it's really the ones that are intended to bring the people in mm-hmm. and then say, hey, well, I see what they can do on the Dodge Viper there. And that's $100,000 or whatever it costs. I forget. Mm-hmm. But you know what? Maybe I could extrapolate what they've done in that car to this Dodge Neon that I'm also interested in that's in my price range.
That's how it works. You know, the idea, if you want to sell a car, when you have a dealership, when people walk in, you want them to feel great. You know, you want them to feel like anything could be possible, just maybe. So when John and Jane Doe and their 2.5 kids or whatever it is come into the dealership and the dad's saying, I'll go help you look at this sedan in a second, honey. I want to look at the Viper real quick.
Yeah, yeah. And then the next thing you know, he's in the seat making engine noises.
Vroom, vroom. Yeah.
And jamming the steering wheel from left to right.
Yeah. Putting nose prints on the glass.
Yeah, exactly. Shifting through all the gears.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And if you think about it, this idea that a dealership is this huge, very, very pristine or nice environment, this almost you would say heavenly, then what better way to really present yourself than to sum up all the bells and whistles, all that is possible with your vehicles in one car, and then let somebody who will hopefully not make a crazy impulse decision. I mean, if you want a Viper, by all means, go in there and buy a Viper. They're for sale. Mm-hmm. But you know, we've done our psychology podcast on the reptilian psychology of buying cars.
Oh, yeah. So, reptilian brain. That's right.
Yeah. So it is these things work in concert with those same kind of processes, mm-hmm. right?
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, we mentioned the Viper a couple of times here. And the reason that one stands out to me is because I'm from Detroit.
Yeah.
And it was around when this all came about. And up until that point, I know it's hard, but you didn't really think about Dodge as being Chrysler's performance brand.
Not really. No.
I mean, you did. There was, you know, there's the whole muscle car history and everything,
right.
but they had other models that were also muscle cars.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that it seemed to be solidified at that point when they came out with the Dodge Viper, because it's just an all-out sports car, nothing but that. It's very pure. And it really brought people back into the Dodge dealerships, and that, you know, led to Dodge sales of other products, you know, Dodge Caravans and Dodge, you know, Neons, like I mentioned.
Yeah.
I think even the Avenger or whatever else was there, you know, that just any model line that happened to be next to it in the showroom also got some attention.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the whole point of a halo car, is just to bring people in.
So here's where we get a little bit different, right? Or here's where we take a different bent, a plot twist.
Where are you going?
I'm going to the fact that earlier you said some good examples of halo cars.
Yeah. Yep. There's some great examples.
Mm-hmm. And there are also some stinkers.
Yeah, that's right. I did. I ran across, in fact, this is where this whole thing came up. I found an article from, it's a website called wheels.ca.
Yes.
And they have a list that's a pretty funny list. It's from 2009, mm-hmm. late 2009, mm-hmm. of the 10 dumbest halo cars.
Which we didn't say they were dumb.
No.
But we're telling you about this
list.
I'm
not here to pass judgment on any of these 10 vehicles, okay? This is just from their list as written by John LeBlanc. So I'm pointing the finger.
All right.
So anyways, this is a pretty good list, though. I thought it was funny. And, you know, there's a little bit of comedy thrown in here, too. So you may want to read the entire article if you get a chance. But I'll skim over it here, and we'll go from 10 down to 1, okay?
Sounds perfect.
Again, according to wheels.ca, not us.
Not us.
Not us. All right. Ready?
Yes.
So these are these are the bad ones. Ones that didn't do what they were intended to do. Number 10. The 2002 to 2006 Volkswagen Phaeton. You remember
that one, guys?
I do. Yeah, I've seen a couple around recently, which is really surprising.
Huh.
Because there were only about 1,400 of them sold in the first year, 820 sold in the next year.
Ouch.
And then the next year, they don't even, you know, record the sales numbers, or at least they're not here in this article, and they decided to pull it off the market. Now, something unusual about this car is that, I mean, besides that it's a VW that's $100,000. It's built on the Audi, I think also on the Bentley Continental, chassis.
But they're not fooling people.
No, and it's a great car. Yeah. But the problem is it's got a VW badge on it, mm-hmm. and it just loses a little bit of that prestige, which is really weird, but it happened.
Sure.
And people just weren't buying it. So they're actually thinking about bringing it back to North America sometime soon. They're talking about that right now.
Right, because if it didn't work the first few years or the last few years, then hey,
yeah.
maybe the let's see, maybe the fifth time's a charm.
Maybe,
in this case.
maybe. All right, you ready to move on?
Yes.
Okay, the 1991 to 94 Jaguar XJ220. You remember that car?
Before we get any further, I love Jaguars. So
I do too.
Okay, so kid gloves on this one.
And this is one of the ones that, remember when we did our abandoned cars in Dubai?
Yeah, yeah.
I saw a picture of an XJ220 that was abandoned in Dubai.
Ouch.
Yeah, yeah. And this is a car that it finally, like when it finally came on set, mm-hmm. when it came to the showrooms, $650,000, Ben. Supercar. It's a Jaguar supercar. It was promised to have, you know, when it was revealed, it's promised to have a V12 engine, mm-hmm. Top speed of 220. So, you know, that's what's called the XJ220. Beautiful looking car, really
yeah,
is.
Yeah.
And they mentioned that the Ferrari F40 sold for $400,000 when Jaguar wanted $580,000 for this one.
Ouch.
which is pretty remarkable. Mm. And then by the time they did get around to building it in 92, the engine was reduced to a turbocharged V6. The all-wheel drive had reverted to rear-wheel drive only, and the price went up.
How far up did
it
go?
Well, it went up $70,000. So that bumped it up to the $650,000.
That's just...
Isn't that amazing? Now, I'm guessing, because it said 92, mm-hmm. I'm wondering if the 91 cars did have the V12 all-wheel drive. Possibly, because those are some incredible cars to see in action.
Yeah, they're still these aren't bad. My I guess my issue with the ones we're calling bad halo cars is a lot of times they're running afoul of psychology. You know
True.
What I mean?
Yeah.
Like that VW badge.
Yeah. Well,
then,
you know what the thing is? These are good cars.
Right.
It's just that they're not doing what they had hoped they had done that would do. You know, one quick sidebar here.
Sidebar.
I started to read an article that I found out later you had to buy a subscription to the website.
Oh.
But it teased me with this idea that the very first muscle car, remember the one that's, the one that is often credited with being the first muscle car, the 1964 Pontiac GTO. That was initially supposed to be a halo car for Pontiac. And this is, you know, 1964, a long time ago. But then the sales just took off on it. That's what people wanted. And, you know, it just went right through the roof after that point. And that's happened to a few cars, like the Chrysler 300 is a good example. The 300 was meant to bring people in, kind of draw them away from the Cadillac crowd,
yeah,
you know, because it was such a beautiful, unique car at the time. Now we see them everywhere. You can tell sales went incredible for them.
Mm-hmm.
They did a fantastic job getting that thing marketed. And a lot of people bought them, and I think it was far more popular than they ever thought it would be. Same with the 64 GTO. I forget how many more they sold than they thought they were. It was either, you know, two, three, four times as many as they had initially intended.
Can I do the next one? Because this is weird.
Yeah.
Okay, so... 1978 to 81, the Volvo 262C Bertone Coupe. So Volvo, right?
Mm-hmm.
The as they explain it, they're makers of the world's safest cars, right?
Yeah.
So they wanted to get rid of that safe car image.
Yeah.
Which is
what?
Just hilarious to me. Well, they wanted to have something that they wanted to be associated, I guess, with a little more performance, a little more like like a sexy racing vehicle, superpowered or something.
Understood.
So they made this car.
So they kind of farmed it out, right?
Yeah, yeah. It kept basically 85% or so of the regular 262's body. The sedan structure.
Okay.
But for that other 15%, they went to Bertone, which is a famous Italian. It's a design company, right?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And so all that these designers did was change the roof, the top of the doors, and the windshield.
Okay.
And some people thought it was sort of ugly. And it didn't work because, you know, it's still – they haven't shed the safe car image.
You know what? I got to look that one up because I can't picture what this one looks like. I just don't remember it.
It's a weird description too. It doesn't sound like it looks good.
I don't think so. No, sounds like very little was modified on a what is normally a boxy car.
Right, right.
Or at least was at that time. Not so much anymore.
I mean, you can't.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Shed the safe car image.
Yeah.
Terrible.
That's
terrible
like idea. Saying, gentlemen, too many people across America believe that our cars work consistently. We need to put in a random shutdown device.
Now, see, you're putting a little voice in people's heads because I think people think they say that anyways. You know that? I think that there are secret meetings.
There's conspiracies in the
car
world.
I think so. Oh, lots of them. Yeah. Well, all right, so you want to move on to number 7?
Yeah.
The 91 and 97 Subaru SVX. And here's something interesting, Ben. This was going to be one of the stuff Scott sees.
Really? You saw one?
I did see one on Georgia 400 about 2 weeks ago. Stood out because I haven't seen one in a long, long time.
Right.
There used to be a couple around where I lived, and I could see them at lunch hour or whatever. But this one, first one in a long time that I've seen. Really unique car. It was kind of their attempt at a luxury sport car. And, it didn't do as well as in the case with most of these. They're expecting low numbers, but they get even less and people just don't buy it.
This is an interesting idea. And if you look at the timeline, you have to wonder if Subaru took a page from the Volvo book because they also went to a design house. An Italian design house, no less.
Yeah.
And I think the company's name is Ital Design.
I am the person's name I'm not even going to attempt to pronounce. But Ital Design is a design house, yes. And it's really a strange looking car. It's got one of the most, I don't know what you call it, remarkable but distinguishing features of it. It was little tiny side windows. And people claim that they can get used to them right away, but it reminds me an awful lot of like the half windows on the Lamborghini Countach.
Yeah.
The lower half that rolls down and that's it. Very much the same on the Subaru SVX, and it's really a unique looking window, and it's kind of this big glass dome shaped car, and I guess apparently it just wasn't the performer that they thought it was going to be, and it didn't compete with, at the time, Acura was making the NSX, the Mazda was making the RX-7, and the Supra Turbo, which was from Toyota, and they said that those were just far and above what the SVX could do, and of course it lost out, and they had intended to sell as many as 10,000 a year, but they it says they never managed to sell more than half of that.
Ouch!
During each of those years, so.
It looked kind of like a concept car too, man, when you just look at it.
Yeah, it was kind of a cool car, and it still stands out on the road. It's just it didn't do what they thought it was going to do.
Like perform well? Sorry.
Exactly. Well, that's true.
It did lower perform. Okay, so then we've got, and you'll notice we're getting more and more recent, but that's not, this is just a list, I think, 10 to 1 best to worst, right?
Yes.
It's not in chronological
order. No, it'll go back.
Yeah.
It'll go back here at the end.
Ford Thunderbird. Speaking of concept cars, my friend.
Oh, yes.
2002, 2005, Ford breaks out this car that they first presented as a concept car in 1999. Mm-hmm. And I love to see a concept car make it.
I do too.
So technically this made it, right? It went into production.
It did. Technically it made it.
Mm-hmm.
It did. My uncle has one of these.
He still does?
Yes, he does. And he loves it. Loves the car, but it got a lot of bad press.
The
reason is it wasn't of course, it's a two-seater, which, it's intended as a sports car.
Right.
But apparently it's, according to this, it's slow in a straight line, sloppy in the corners, and the car, because the soft suspension that, they thought that the boomers that they were trying to attract with this car,
easy ride.
A smoother ride rather than a crisp handling ride would be the one that everybody wants. So that made the car kind of wiggle and jiggle, they say, all over the pavement, like a Lincoln Town car. So it made this little tiny sports car feel like a big Lincoln Town car, and that's not a good feeling.
It's certainly not a feeling people want to pay for.
No, that's not what they want to pay for, and so the sales just went right through the floor, and that was it for the Thunderbird, because they only made it for 3 years. And my uncle loves his, though. He absolutely loves it. It's his baby.
He's had it for a while.
It's just his weekend car, and he really, really enjoys it, and good for him.
All right. Well, no
anybody else that owns one.
Yeah.
Same with all these cars.
The
really.
Older Thunderbirds, the first Thunderbirds, that's my jam right there.
The one that's styled after the F-55, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It's supposed to look like.
Well,
that's your jam, huh?
I'm just throwing slang around. I'm just making up
like
slang
that.
At this point.
I really like that.
I probably
that.
Didn't
good.
Make that up.
All right, here, let's quickly go through a few and we get to, because we're only number five.
Right, Lincoln Blackwood.
Lincoln Blackwood, 2001 to 2002. You'll notice how short that is.
Mm-hmm.
15 months. That's all the Blackwood was on sale for.
Ouch.
I know. That's because the sales were not so good, of course. The Lincoln, this is, they called it Lincoln's $52,500 Escalade wannabe. And if you remember the Blackwood, it was the one that had the pinstriping and could only be purchased in black, which, what does that remind you of?
Henry Ford.
And this is a Ford car. So, Ford Lincoln Mercury.
Right.
Anyways, despite the fact that it was a truck, there was no four-wheel drive option. The box wouldn't hold much of anything. I'm not going to say what it's – well, yeah, why not? It says it couldn't hold a case of gun shells, a six-pack, and a stick of chew.
Which is, of course, what everybody who's buying an Escalade wants.
Yeah, yeah, apparently. I'm sure a huge Lincoln Blackwood, rather. Yeah.
I'm getting excited because we're just a few away from my favorite.
All right, number four, Chevrolet SSR. Now, that's that kind of – I think it's kind of a cool-looking pickup truck.
You know what it is?
The 2003 to 2006.
Yeah.
It's interesting, but also didn't sell. I mean, it did bring people in the door, I would believe.
Yeah, it's a new idea.
I think people went to the dealership to look at this car. I really believe that. But the problem was, it was $42,000. And, you know, at the time, seemed like a good idea.
Right.
Didn't do so well. You at least in this area, you rarely see them.
Mm.
They're here and there, but not very many. Number three. This is one that I've seen recently, but very, very few again. The Plymouth Prowler.
This is my favorite.
Is it really?
Off of this list, I just think, and this is going to be something a lot of people will probably disagree with me with, and that's fine because it's a subjective thing, you guys.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is just a dog ugly car.
Really?
I don't like the way it's put together, man.
Oh,
I think
no kidding.
They fail at what they were going for, which is to sort of emulate the aesthetic of the classic.
My eyes are wide open looking at you. What? Really?
Don't like it.
I like the looks of it. I like, you know, I think the reason that it went away is that it didn't meet the performance demands of the public.
Sure.
It had a V6 engine, four-speed automatic, and it was supposed to look like this hot rod, supposed to be a hot rod.
Yeah.
And it just didn't quite do it. So almost right away you saw people stuffing V8 engines into these things.
Mm-hmm. And there's a very large community for Prowlers.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Anybody that has one. I mean, of course, they were only made a few years, 97, and then there's a gap, and then 99 through 2002. And I thought, you know what, I'm going to the Plymouth brand went away in 2001. I think the last year they were actually calling them Dodge Prowlers, but I'm not sure. I thought that was the way it was going, but they may still be badged Plymouth Prowlers. I know they made them side by side on the same line as the Dodge Viper.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah, they were right next to each other. The Viper line on one side, the Prowler line on the next. Both handmade, and the cars were just wheeled from station to station as they made them. But anyways, I guess it just wasn't enough, and you know, finally, again, this is one of those cars that they were trying to attract the boomers with.
Yeah.
And they didn't like the fact that it was underpowered.
Well, it's that, you see, we're starting to see some common threads. I think astute listeners are picking up on this too.
Yeah.
That if you are trying to sell something as the ultimate end-all coolness of your company, you have to make sure that it can go
well. You got to follow through with it. If it's going to look like a hot rod, it should drive like a hot rod.
Yeah.
Exactly. And if it's going to look like a car that, you know, is meant to be on the racetrack, it should handle like it's meant to be on the racetrack.
I think that's fair.
I do too. I think that's where they missed it right there. And I think a lot of people felt the same.
I want a van that goes 200 miles an hour.
You know, there are some of those. There's a jet van. We'll talk about that. All right. Number two.
Yeah.
You want to mention this one because, was this the one that you were talking about your dad maybe wanted, or is it a different one? He was talking about the XLR, right?
This is different.
This is the older version, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right, you want to hit it?
Sure, yeah. So the Cadillac Allante.
Yeah.
1987, 1993.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this one, of course, we see, like, most people think it was overpriced. The car itself was trying to make Cadillac more high end, I guess, higher end, presented as such. And so it tries to do some other sort of luxury roadster moves. They're trying to get into that group where you see, like the Mercedes 560, you know,
mm-hmm.
and, instead of this working, it did have a definite effect, but, it just made General Motors kind of look bad.
Yeah.
So it was.
Well, it was supposed to be sporty.
It
was supposed to be sporty. And what happened though? I mean, it ended up
not.
Let's just say not being sporty.
Yeah. It was built in Italy.
And this is the weird thing. Go ahead and tell, how are they sent here to the United States?
Okay.
This kills me.
Yeah. All right. So they're built in Italy.
Yeah.
The actual body. And then once the bodies are finished, they're flown across the Atlantic in 747s to Detroit.
Talk. I mean, that's
how is that?
I know.
You know what I mean?
I know what you're saying. This is where the cost comes in, because how much of that, you know, transportation cost do you think is part of the, mm-hmm. Let's say the overpricing of the model?
A lot of people thought the same thing because they didn't buy too many.
Yeah. At how much?
At $60,000, which means a little bit over
$60,000 two-seater convertible Cadillac.
That doesn't really handle that well.
It doesn't handle that well. It's not necessarily that fast. Actually, not very fast at all.
But they said, hey, we've got stick-to-itiveness, so they sold it for 5 more years.
That's right.
And they never broke $50,000.
Now, okay, here's the last one. This is, according to Wheels.ca, the dumbest halo car ever. The 1989 to 1991 Chrysler TC by Maserati.
Applause.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I know two people that own these.
Really?
Yeah.
That's weird.
I do. I had a former boss that just loved his. I mean, did like a body off restoration of his and drives it in local parades and things like that.
Oh, that's cool.
Went crazy with it. I mean, and despite the better advice of some of his coworkers who said, you know, maybe you shouldn't spend the money on that. Maybe you should get something different. But
were you one of those coworkers?
No, I never said it because I was, my employment depended on it.
You're kind of a car purchase enabler.
No,
though, right?
I know. I didn't say it, but, yeah, you know what this reminds me of? And everybody's going to say this. It's a LeBaron that's badged a Maserati.
Yeah. That it's,
there's more to it. There's more to it.
There's stuff under the hood.
Yeah, there's
I guess,
a, well, know? Very little. I mean, there's very, very little. There's a, let's see, what's the Maserati part here? It's basically, here's the funny part. It's a front drive K car chassis. You know, it's two seat convertible body.
Mm-hmm.
It's built by Maserati, of course. And what it has is, I think it just has a cylinder head, a Maserati cylinder head. And that's about it.
Yeah.
I mean, I mean, there are a few styling cues here and there. There's a round window at the back instead of, a roll up window or whatever.
Whoa.
It was. Yeah, I know. And, I don't know. I just don't understand it. There might have been small styling cues other than that, but really, it's just a dressed up LeBaron.
Well, yeah. Okay. I'm not going to go so far as to make fun of it for being that, but you're right.
Yeah.
Because there's not much that changed except for the price and a couple of stylistic conventions.
Yeah. And, you know, predictably so, the sales numbers were really poor on this thing.
Yeah.
They were planning 30,000. They sold 7,300.
That's
and
kinda,
they canceled it in 91.
We cannot end on this note. I want to make a point in defense of the people who own any of the cars on what we just listed.
Oh, please do, because I feel bad about that.
Yeah, I'm kind of broke up over it. But what I need to make, the point that is crucial here, is that these cars, if you think about it, given their small production runs that they tend to have, they are unique cars, and increasingly so, you know, as they age.
Yeah.
And that's what a lot of people who kind of fall for or become infatuated with a car. That's what they want. They want that unique, perfect, and sort of singular feeling when they're down the road. You
something
know?
Low production. Like when I saw that Subaru SVX on
exactly.
the road. That's probably the only one that I've seen in the 3 years that I've been here.
Yeah, and people love that. I love seeing different cars.
Yeah.
And, I mean, no offense to Hondas, but they're everywhere.
No, imagine in 30 years, 40 years.
Yeah.
Imagine how rare something like that is going to be. And, you know, mm-hmm. maybe you've got one of only a couple hundred that exist at that point.
Mm-hmm.
You just never know. I mean, it becomes more and more – well, some of them become more and more valuable
right.
over time. Others, you know, they just kind of maintain.
So I think what we're trying to say is, you know, be proud of your car. Don't feel like we're dogging on you.
No.
At all.
Definitely don't. It just happened to make the list because it was at one time a halo car and mm-hmm. didn't do what it's supposed to do. But that means, you know, as a positive for you, mm-hmm. you know, you paid probably a lot of money for it, but low production numbers.
Yeah.
So that's good.
So we got sort of a more positive in there.
Yeah.
I feel like we've done halo cars pretty well. You got anything else for me?
No. I was going to mention the whole flagship vehicle thing, but I think we'll just let it go because flagship, similar, not the exact same thing.
Think of a Venn diagram, right?
Exactly.
All right.
We'll talk about it later.
Yeah. Before I get into even more bad jokes, we've got to get out of here, guys. This is the part where we tell you about our Facebook. And on Facebook, we're known as Car Stuff. On Twitter, we're also on Car Stuff. We're also known as Car Stuff, that is. Scott runs an awesome blog. And if you're there, you should also check out our website, HowStuffWorks.com, where you can find answers about pretty much anything automotive related. Right, Scott?
Pretty much.
Pretty much?
Yeah, I think so. We just got a ton of articles about everything. Use the search function. You'll find more than you think is there initially.
And if you are typing into our jazzy search bar and you can't find what you're looking for, please send us an email and we will try our best to answer your questions. Our email address is
carstuff@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@HowStuffWorks.com.